I'm Brian McCreath from WCRB. I'm at Symphony Hall with Lila Josefowicz, who's here with the Boston Symphony to play music by John Adams. Lila, thank you for a little bit of your time today.
Thank you so much.
This is a fascinating piece to me. I'm so glad that the BSO programmed it and that you're here to do it. And I'm very curious. I love origin stories. Tell me about your first awareness of what it was John was doing with this commission. When you first heard the theme of what he was working with, not musically, but the idea, what was your reaction?
Well, to kind of go backwards even from there, so I knew John since I was basically 20, and that's 20 years ago, basically. And we have been such great friends and close collaborators and colleagues for all of this time. And we met and started our collaboration with his first violin concerto, which was written before I knew him. And so we did that for years. And then he always said to me, oh, if I do another one, it's got to be really different. And I always kind of said to him, well, ha ha, like, okay, sure. And then when all of this talk really started, he said, oh, and he was a little cryptic about it. And he's like, I got some pretty strong ideas about this, and ha ha, and I'll let you know soon, and ha ha. And then eventually the ideas started coming out that he wanted sort of a very strong theme to write about, and it would have to be somehow relating to my character as a person. It just became this whole world of what it means to be a strong protagonist and a female protagonist, and how it relates to the reference to Scheherazade. But also, it's obviously a very hot issue and a very current issue. He never could have anticipated John, I'm saying, the whole frenzy of this latest movement now, which is really just across the entire world of different art forms and different political forms, and it's just wow, and such a very loaded and hot issue. So in many ways, I think he kind of he almost sort of foresaw this, maybe unconsciously, as he has a way of knowing what buttons exactly to push with some of his, what he writes about.
Yeah, no, he's kind of a prophetic voice, right? That so many of his works have resonance before we even know they're going to have resonance. But when he said something different, did you feel like when you got this score and you began looking at it, like this, there was a part of John Adams you had not heard nor seen before? Is there something unique in Adams's voice that comes through this piece?
Well, this whole idea of it being a symphony for violin and orchestra is he takes very seriously. I mean, it's almost like a form of like symphony fantastique that has a narrative going on. And this is really a journey for this character, this woman, and seeing and feeling and just sort of going along with her as she goes through all these different challenges, internal challenges, such as in A Long Desire, which is the second movement, just fighting for what she would love and what she loves and not what people are saying she should love, and things like this. Where are one's passions and how does one feel them? And that's a very internal struggle. And some of the other movements show more of the external struggle and her very kind of brilliant way of being belligerent against an evil kind of crowd. So this is really up my alley in terms of being able to stand back and rebel in the ways that I feel like rebelling.
Excellent. Yeah, so
and he knew this, of course, about me. So, because he knows me so well as a person. So this really, I think it was sort of a pseudo character portrait in many ways, more ways than one.
Fascinating. So you mentioned the recent months of, we'll shorthand it by calling it the hashtag MeToo movement, right? And yet, in the course of any relationship with a piece of music, musicians, there's an evolution of a musician's relationship. So this was premiered a few years ago. How is it different now for you from that premiere in 2015 with Alan Gilbert in New York?
Well, it's amazing, first of all, Alan, what he does with this. And he makes this very challenging piece of music for everyone involved on the stage, about as possibly, it's the wrong word, comfortable is completely the wrong word, but he gives a sense of security to us. So every time I play this with him, I'm kind of feeling many feelings of joy and gratitude. The first performances were really just so amazing, because we didn't, none of us, and Alan and I had studied for quite a while, but of course studying and then getting out and really portraying this very emotional situation is very different. And in some ways, this is kind of like a role for me, an actress's role. There's a real kind of emotional and spiritual kind of evolution that happens inside this person. And what I want to do more than anything else is just show this and make the audience, in as much as I can possibly make them, feel this journey along with me. So there's a lot of emotional and kind of gut-wrenching moments in here that, and some of them are sort of hedonistically joyous, and some of them are very sort of very internal and sort of kind of just grasping for answers. And this is something that I've tried very hard to express in the performances. So the first performances, having to take all of this on, were sort of mammoth experiences for me. And now I sort of know, since I've probably done this over 50 times, what all the little traps are, I mean, in more technical terms, and where exactly things can kind of unravel, and where things just, the pressure points of the piece, and just understanding the overall shape in such a way that one couldn't have grasped in the first few performances.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, I guess, especially when you put it in terms of being an actor playing a role, almost, that you know where those dramatic pivot points are and can really dig into them maybe a little bit more thoroughly. If I could just ask one more question that's kind of on a bigger picture. I mean, I don't know what the actual percentages is. I'll confess that I haven't looked at your exact programs over the last few years, but your percentage of, you know, living composers, music of our time, however, whatever euphemism, is really high. You play a lot of music that's been written very recently, and that's a conscious decision. I know that. And I'm curious about whether there was any particular defining moment when you said to yourself, you know, this is really what my mission is, you know, I'm not going to worry so much about the Sibelius and the Tchaikovsky and the Mendelssohn, and I'm going to be about our time. Was there a defining moment for you that took you in that direction?
I don't think there was really one, but there was a number of moments. There was one specific time I remember, just being 18, and having this sort of feeling like I was playing, I think I was playing Mendelssohn somewhere in Holland or something. And it was, everything, of course, felt natural to me. But at the same time, I sort of felt like, wait a second, like, what am I going to be doing with music for the rest of my career? I mean, I'm 18 years old. I'm feeling already like there's more I need to be doing here. And what's wrong with this picture? Because there was something already wrong for me. I had done all the standard works and I had been performing them for a few years. And I thought, I just, as much as I love these works, I can't keep doing these same works for years and years and years, which so many colleagues do. And I think there might be now a subtle shift away from that, I think. But there has to be more spontaneity and more kind of unexpected qualities that we bring to classical music. And people cannot sit back and only listen comfortably. We have to be always on the edge of our seat in some way. And I felt there was a lot of also attitude in orchestras when people end up coming in and playing or conducting the same music, and everyone gets so comfortable. And I wanted to just somehow stir that up, but I hadn't really figured out how I was going to do that yet. And when I started this new path, it was very clear to me that this was my answer for that.
And just to follow up with that a little bit, there may be more musicians coming along who are of the same mindset, and yet, congratulations, you're someone who's actually made it work as a career. Because a lot of people maybe have that mindset and they want to carve that path. But as you say, the industry's not completely open to that with everybody doing that, right? So, what about the presenting and the orchestra industry and their role in this?
Well, it's a very important role. I mean, in my case, in some ways, I had done things, if you want to call it, in the right order, possibly, in that I had started very young. Everyone's career, by the way, I mean, obviously has a different path. It's like a fingerprint and everyone's different. But in my case, I had started playing violin so early and I had started performing in general so early. So it was already I was a bit known before I even started doing the newer things. So I think it would be very hard for someone to say, these are the kind of works I want to do when people don't really know anything about what they do or what they're about or what they sound like. So, I mean, in this case, it's sort of built on itself. And I feel very lucky about that. The other thing that I hope to do with this is build trust between orchestras and orchestra administrators, et cetera, that if I'm going to take on a new work, that they can say, okay, I think this will be interesting because this is a choice she's made. And this is also what I hope to do and bring audience along with me in this. We're part of a living, breathing art form that needs to just keep on, the heart needs to keep beating constantly, right?
So. Well, I'm thrilled you're here. I'm thrilled you're doing this piece. I'm thrilled you're doing it right now. It's a great time to hear this. And so, Lila Josefowicz, thanks for your time today. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.